This is the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson, and for the next hour we will be talking, I can't even speak properly because I'm so excited, we'll be talking about all things food. And the reason why I'm so excited, I've never seen so much food in the studio. I mean, we quite often have quite a lot of food, don't we, Ollie? This is Ollie Lloyd, my co-presenter.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it so full.
No, it's absolutely chock-a-block, and some lovely smells coming through as well. So I'm joined by Ollie Lloyd, who is Chief Executive, I think, Great British Chefs, Ollie. We've got two fabulous guests. Well, we've always got fabulous guests, but we've got fabulous guests as usual. We've got Willie Harcourt-Coos, who everybody will know Willie. He's our chocolate man. Everybody knows about Willie's chocolate, surely. With your television programme. You must be famous. Do you get stopped in the street?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. But so a very, very famous brand, I think, increasingly so. And Karen O'Donoghue of the Happy Tummy Company. Very important subject with IBS and gluten-free and all that. And increasingly people looking to try and find good products, you know, because they're having a problem or they're making a lifestyle choice.
Yeah.
So we're going to have I can smell. You've baked a cake. Did you bake that cake yourself? It's sitting right in front of me.
Yes. So we bake every day. So yeah, this just came fresh from the bakery.
Wow. So yes, we've got bakery stuff. And I think you've even made your own. Is this peanut butter?
Yeah.
Made your own peanut butter.
And then we've brought some Newton and Pot jam, which is handmade in Hackney as well.
Oh, wow. And what's in that? Is that butter?
This is just regular salted butter.
Butter. And then Willie has bought, this looks like
what
there's almost
hundreds.
Yeah, what haven't you bought? There's some hundreds of packets of stuff. So, we're going to talk about all of those. So, Willie, can we start with you? I remember watching your programme. Where long ago is it now? Is it a while ago?
About 9 years ago.
God, was it that long ago? It can't be that long ago. And the interesting thing for me was your passion for chocolate for a start. And I think people forget that 9 years ago, there wasn't really the choice of amazing artisan chocolates that there are now. And you must have been instrumental in driving some of that at the time, I think.
Well, I mean, it'd be nice to think so. You are right, there wasn't anyone when I started. And
no.
I think, if I'm right, there's about 20 small chocolate makers bean to bar in the UK. The Americans have put us to shame. Normally they're behind us, but in actual fact, they've got several hundred, maybe 300 now, small chocolate makers.
Wow. And it was actually your love of adventure, I think, combined with your love of chocolate, which made it such interesting viewing for me and took you to Venezuela.
That's right. I mean, I've been to Venezuela twice in the last 2 months and I still am a major globetrotter. I sell in about 30 countries, more than 30 countries, and I'm still buying directly from the farmers. So I've been in Indonesia, Venezuela. Yep.
And this real thing about, you know, coming across a sort of, or buying a hacienda. I mean, how mad were you to do that? It's not a normal person that does that, is it? Come on, let's face it, Willie.
No, I mean, I mean, the Henri Pittier National Park where my farm is, it has 3% of the world's plants and animals and 6.5% of the world's bird species. And it steeps up into cloud forest at the top of the farm. So it's one of those places that was wow anyway. And the farm was producing cacao since 1640 and, you know, beaches accessed by boats only all along the coast. I mean, it was mind-blowingly beautiful, you know. And I was with Tanya, my girlfriend at the time, to be wife. And, you know, we were lost. But it was, if you thought about it, it was the best thing I ever did from the point of view of meeting chocolate. But the worst financial investment
you've ever done.
You know, I still have my farm. I've just been on it. But you know, very sadly, Venezuela is suffering from, you know, I mean, I don't think even people can comprehend it's a humanitarian crisis. It appears that seems to be the case.
And you owning a farm there, how much can you help, in you know, locally in order to try and provide work and, you know, make chocolate from there?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I was there, as I said, twice in the last 2 months and to check on a shipment of beans to make sure everything was all right, and everybody was all right. And actually, interestingly enough, even though Venezuela's hit very hard times with inflation, the cacao actually is a dollars-based commodity. So actually all the cocoa farmers are okay, and the people I'm working with actually are thriving. So that was a real light in the tunnel. And, you know, I had to drive literally the length of Venezuela. I did a couple of thousand miles, and you know, to see them and come back. Mm. And so that was a very positive thing to see.
And can you explain to us exactly what cacao is?
Well, it's a tree.
What does it look like?
I mean, it's a tree that grows in the shade. It's pretty much known to have originated in the Amazon jungle. And then spread up all through the Americas, up to Mexico and places. And Aztecs are probably the most famous known people, civilization, for using cacao. It is a tree that grows in the shade. It has pods which come straight out of it. I think the botanical name is Theobroma.
And they're about the size of a rugby ball, aren't they? Well, a bit smaller than that, but they're big.
Smaller.
They're big, aren't they?
Yeah, and maybe, you know, 20 centimetres long and, and wide and kind of, you know, pod-shaped. And inside there's 30, 40 seeds, which each one's covered in a kind of fleshy-like, almost like lychee things. And I always say there's three important things for making chocolate. There's the genetics of the plant. There's the post-harvest that the beans were fermented properly in boxes, which basically cooks them and breaks down the flavours, develops the flavours and breaks down the different compounds in it. And then, of course, the chocolatier, because they probably have the most responsibility themselves, because they could burn the beans or over-raise
them. Yeah, absolutely. And in your view, cacao is like fine wine, isn't it? And the way you almost treat it and the way you blend it.
Yeah, I mean, I really think so. I cacao grows around the world at 20 degrees above and below the equator, and it has different strains everywhere, you know, whether it's Indonesian or Madagascan originating in Venezuela, and they all taste different. So people, there's a lot of talk about single origin, but of course, single origin, that would be like saying that the wine is French. You can imagine what the French would think of that.
But so single origin just means the country, doesn't it?
It just means the country.
Right.
But single estate, it means that it comes from just one farm. And it's a specific type of bean, which has a specific flavour.
And it will have a very distinct character because of the terroir and the, you know, the weather and all sorts of other things.
Exactly, yeah.
So your Venezuelan farm, what's the distinct flavours that you've got there that are inherent there? Because I know you do chocolate from all around the world, but specifically from your farm.
Very heavy, plummy, fruity. Ooh. I mean, really, really heavy, plummy, fruity. I mean, Chihuahua is the farm that I border with, which is probably the most famous, and that's the flagship bar of Amadei Italian chocolate makers. But it's the same cacao along that coastline.
And you've bought loads here. The ones that I'm most familiar with is, I think I see them in Waitrose, but probably Sainsbury's and others as well, is these sort of small bars that are square. And there's loads of them now, loads of different ones. And I think what's really, really hit home with me is because you've got all these different bars, everybody starts to realise that they are from different countries and they do have different flavour profiles, which can be quite difficult to work out when you look at other types of chocolate.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were to say, hey, what do I look for in a chocolate? Yeah. I would look that someone has specifically sourced their beans from one particular farm. I think that there's a lot of people in the industry that are talking the talk, but aren't actually doing what they're saying. So there's a lot of talk of people, you know, we make all our own chocolate under their own roof. You know, apart from the sort of 20 small people, artisan people, they don't. You know, and the easiest way to distinguish is just flip over the back and have a look at what's in the ingredients. If there's soy lecithin and vanilla, no one would put vanilla if they've sourced the best beans in the world.
Because they don't need to.
I mean, it's all about the flavour of the cacao.
Yeah.
And soy lecithin was introduced in the 1950s, and it's basically part of the process that enables the machine to run fluidly all day. But, I mean, I personally can taste it. So that's a very easy way of telling whether
immediately
no self-respecting chocolate maker would put not one of the 300 Americans that I just mentioned, or you know.
And there's three type of beans, Criollo being the bean.
Some say Pozzolana, only because there's less of them. But I'm not so sure. You know, there's a very well-known French chocolate maker which made a bean called a Pedregal, a box of chocolates. And it's about its rarity. But for me, it doesn't have the flavour. And I'm all about flavours. I mean, I've chosen to work with a number of cacao farmers around the world, and they each have their own. So if you don't like that one, you like that one. You know, whether it's fruity, nutty, a caramelly toffee. I mean, you know, for me, it's a...
And that will just be naturally from the bean, depending where the bean comes from.
You know, all naturally, but I spend my whole time at trade shows, and when they go, did you put raisins in that? Or you know,
No, that's the bean.
Did you put caramel in that? Yeah. I mean, you know, people can't believe it.
But that's because, obviously, you know, the journey of knowledge in this country very much comes from Cadbury's, then into green and blacks, and then there's been the revolution off the back of it. And I think, you know, most of the chocolates that people eat are what I'm going to call manufactured flavours and are quite processed, aren't they? And,
yeah.
And it's what you and the emergent revolution are doing is crafting something much more bespoke and different.
And bringing out the character of the bean as well,
yeah,
as much as possible.
I think, you know, Mr. Cadbury and Rantries, these were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But there's so much money involved, not that we're getting it necessarily, but there's so much money involved that it just went industrial. I mean, England's food did kind of go industrial for a long time. Didn't it? I mean, you know,
we had Caroline Steele on last week, and she was, I mean, she'll talk about the industrialisation of food and how depressing it is actually. But this is trying to do that volume and be commercial, but really stay true to, you know, to the taste and the process for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's about, you know, price points of ingredients and things. I mean, I have strayed true. There's nothing that you could say to me that I would not. Yeah, I'd be embarrassed to say, or I've changed. Mm. I start from the point of view of wanting to make the best bar, whether it's raspberries and cream and refining, you know, freeze-dried raspberries into the chocolate. I work backwards and then work out how I can do the economics.
But also, Willie, it's got your name on it. And therefore, there is a degree of, first of all, if people buy into what you do, there's a degree of trust that you're going to do it right. But the reverse of that is it's your reputation as well. So you know, it's a brave thing to put your name on everything, isn't it? Because it's personal. It is personal.
Well, I won't be selling it. I mean, I think that's an interesting thing, isn't it? It has got my name on it. Yeah, but I'm just as passionate as I was when I first started. I mean, even more so now, because I suppose people buy the chocolate, so I have the opportunity to reach an audience, you know. And, you know, chocolate's interesting. There's, like many foods are that have become industrialised, there's an opportunity. I mean, chocolate's the weirdest thing. If it's everybody's best friend, and yet there was such an open field that no one was making real chocolate.
You know,
I'm not a massive believer in subscription businesses, but I do subscribe to one, which is one of my sort of most loyal. I should subscribe to a couple. That's a lie. But
you're not going to quote a competitor of Woolies here.
Checking. Not at all. So I get a box from Cocoa Runners, which is basically every month, and it could be more frequent, I'll admit, about four bars of single estate type, I'm going to call them in that broad bracket, of kind of quality chocolates arrive. And what's fun is they come with this lovely description of the different chocolatiers and what journey they've been on, who they are and where they make it. And they're all, and when you know, when you sit through, you know, and work through them over your month, they're all really different. And I think that's one of the most exciting things is, you know, we came from a place where chocolate was all the same and you went to a chocolate bar to get that taste. And actually the really fun part is the sense of discovery, rather like wine or cheese, that now you pick up a bar and you have something that's very, very different.
I mean, in front of us here, so for example, we've got an Indonesian dark chocolate that's got soft caramel notes, according to you on that. Then we've got Sambarano Gold, which is Madagascan, which has got notes of summer fruits. We've got ones that's raisins and plums. And that is exactly what you're trying to do, isn't it, is bring that out and actually make people aware of it, I guess. You know, educate people.
Yeah, because look, people don't have the language. That's one of the things. That's why people are probably saying to you at trade fairs, have you put raisin in it? They're trying to, you know, people need encouraging to understand it. And sort of if you say, it's got this in it, then you'll probably find it, which is part of the education journey.
I love the fact that you said you love Milk of the Stars, because you've just talked a lot about the dark bars reflecting the flavour profile, but I wanted milk chocolate lovers. You know, I've got friends who love milk chocolate, and they were saying to me, well, what about us? So I used the Surabaya Gold to make the Milk of the Stars.
You see, I don't like milk chocolate. but I really like this. That's the only milk chocolate I will buy. Is this? So it's called it's Willy's Cacao, but it's Milk of the Stars, Indonesian Surabaya, and it's got 54 on it, which I presume is 54% cocoa.
But that's still quite high within the milk.
Oh yeah,
within the chocolate. Yeah, most milk chocolates, what, 30?
Well, I mean the big one, 25. Yeah. Which 12
if
and a half
lucky.
Is. You know, butter and 12 and a half are solids. Mm.
And for me, it does have though naturally soft caramel notes, but it's very intense.
Yeah,
it's a very intense sort of milk chocolate. Yeah. So that's what I go to when I feel a little bit...
And low sugar, not that I'm about low sugar. I think if you're selling a brand, you've got to be about what you're about, which is like, I'm trying to make me the best.
You know. So the other thing that you have on these packets is it's got 70, 71, you know, 69, and we're just talking about 54%. And that is the actual cocoa level, isn't it?
Cocoa content.
Yeah. Cocoa content, sorry. And most dark chocolate will be around 70, 80%. You've got one here that's 100%. Now, my experience of 100% cocoa is, oh my God, that's bitter. What's this one?
Have you ever tried that?
No. Shall I try it now?
Well, I think I'm going to try it. Yeah, it's Cerro Largo, south of the lake in Venezuela. And I think there's a bean for everything.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, for different uses in chocolate, whether it be a low or a high percentage, or even if it's going to be something you want to flavour, you know, so if I make my orange, I use a Cuban with honey flavour profile, or, you know, that, and the Cerro Largo bean really... Well, you tell me.
Well, I've eaten some... there's a single estate, isn't there, in Grenada. I think it's a... Is it cooperative there, where they produce their own chocolate? One of theirs is 100%. Oh, God, I couldn't even... I had to spit it out, actually. Yeah. So bitter. Yeah. But I know some people love that taste profile. So, Ollie, can you... You're eating some now. Can you speak? Because I can't speak and eat this at the same time. So
I'm now...
Have you now got it? Right.
I'll tell an anecdote while I'm preparing to analyse it. I remember cooking for the first time with one of your blocks, the cacao blocks, and I just completely... I made a chocolate mousse, and I just used that.
But anyway, didn't use anything else? Oh, my God.
It was like... I think everyone was like, I'm not sure you got that recipe right. I know who had that dinner with me, and I suspect they've probably never phoned me again since. In the danger, I might cook them another chocolate or create a chocolate mousse like that.
Did you not put sugar in it?
No. But that's my point. No, so literally
it was like... You put nothing in it? No cream? Nothing.
No, I had all the other stuff. Oh. I didn't add extra sugar. I went with the percentage. So if it said add 200 grams of chocolate, I added that. Yeah. You imagine what happened? Yeah. It wasn't great. Mm. It wasn't your fault. It was my fault.
That isn't as bitter as I've had before for 100%. It's got that, I don't know, is it sort of...
But it's quite bitter.
It is quite bitter. But in a... It's not my favourite. It's not my favourite because I obviously don't like that sort of taste profile. But it's definitely edible. Whereas I've had the 100% thing before and I literally... it's just too much. Is it that sort
layered
of...
Layered with flavour. It has got layers. Layered. Different. I think you have to let your mouth readjust. You know, and once it has, once you kind of, if you could call it shock, or, you know, if you're not used to eating 100%.
It's very nutty.
It's
almost
nutty, yeah.
Bark-like, actually.
Mm. Mm. As long as it's not woody.
No, do you like that sort of? It's a bit too much for me.
It's too dark for me.
It's
too dark for me. I mean, it's like a sort of massive red wine almost, though, isn't it? I mean, it's... Or a port, almost.
You fall into different categories, don't you?
Yeah.
You're a milk chocolate person, dark chocolate person, or 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that is my biggest selling bar globally.
Is it really?
All around the world.
Seriously.
Chinese buy more of that bar. I mean, it is incredible.
No, but that's interesting, because there you're talking about, you know, the level of sweetness that, you know, we are a culture, I mean, the Americans even more so, have been brought up on, like, really sweet chocolate. I mean, American chocolate is, broadly speaking, inedible, if you get the kind of... general stuff that's out there, because it's just so
it's
damn
just
sweet.
Sugar.
It is. And, you know, actually, this is there's nothing sweet about this at all.
Mm. I can eat it though. What about you, Karen? Do you like it?
That figure that you mentioned is so interesting. I wonder what the use cases for the chocolate are, because, like, in my industry, I see so many people using cacao now as a superfood, and they're adding it to their porridge in the morning, they're adding it to, like, quinoa, they're adding it to just regular dishes, they're, like, shaving it on top of salads. So it'd be really interesting to find out the use case of, like, your number one customer for that chocolate. I think it's good. I think For me, I'm like similar to you, Willie. I'm really into like lots of taste and getting different profiles the more I like chew on the food. I think for me, that's probably like a bit limited in terms of the profile that I'm getting. Like I'm just getting a super heavy, like a dense Merlot kind of vibe going on. Yeah. But I would absolutely use that as a nourishing product to eat. Like if I wanted lots of flavonoids in my diet, yeah, I'd definitely be eating that chocolate.
Mm. And that's what I think is interesting about, you know, certainly from the research we've done and how, you know, what's in people's store cupboards, you know, cocoa powder, chocolate, cacao, all this stuff is increasingly in people's store cupboards because they are, as you say, baking, making savoury dishes. People know you throw a cube into your chili con carne.
Can you open that? I can't open it. Okay, so you're absolutely right. People are chucking things in. We're going to talk in a minute about Willie's sort of stuff that he's doing for cooking. This is a 72%, I think. Yeah. Something like that.
Yes.
This is much more sort of mainstream. This is what the sort of absolute dark chocolate that I love, this level.
That's, I think, quite a sophisticated bar. No? Mm. I mean, I would almost say kind of coffee-ish, nutty notes.
No, that's Trinitario.
That's Trinitario. So, you know, back to what you were saying earlier on, you've got Porcelanas, Creoles, Trinitarios and Forastera. 85% of the world's cacao comes from Africa and it's Forastera, except for Madagascar, which is a Forastera Creole cross. Mm. And it's the other 15% that are really interesting. And then inside that, the top 5% are actually properly fermented and dried. You know, that really make the flavours.
You see, that for me is everything that a chocolate should be.
Yeah.
Do you love that kind
of chocolate? Yeah, I think that's phenomenal.
It's complicated. It's got a long aftertaste.
Yeah.
It's got the right texture. Do you not like it, Ellie?
I adore it.
I
adore it.
It's fruit. You really get the fruit in that chocolate.
Mm. It is. And that's Venezuelan, of course. And that's not nuts and coffee. But you've got, as you say, you've got here, you know, things that are naturally fruity, summer fruits. Do you want to try that one, Karen?
Just to paint a picture. Sue is basically trying to work her way through an entire Sue is basically trying to work her way through a table full of chocolate.
No, I can't. I can't eat that much. You're recommending the raisins.
Well, I just think the raisins that just jump. I'm always amazed by.
Do you know Duffy's?
Yes.
So Duffy's. I think they're up in the north of England somewhere, aren't they? Northeast of England, up there somewhere, I think.
Yeah, he's one of the early chocolate makers.
Yeah, he does an amazing bar that literally tastes of raisins, naturally tastes of raisins. Yeah. And I presume, I don't know whether this is a Peruvian, is that right?
From Peruvian, Chulucanas.
Is this the one I've got here? So can you open you're better opening these packets than me. And again, this is just you bringing out the natural notes of raisins and plums. And this is, from Peru. And these are Criollo beans. Let's see what we think of that one, shall we? This is just one of my favourite days of all time.
Thank you so much. Epic. Mm.
I'm waiting for Karen to say what she thinks. You see, now, that is even better than the last one. It is.
Mm.
That is so raisiny. You would assume that you've added raisins to that.
100%.
Yeah.
Like,
it's amazing.
Dense, really, really good organic wild.
Mm. It is organic.
From the jungle.
Mm. As well. So, I mean, lots of the beans, 85% of the world's cacao is organic as well.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, just naturally. By default. Mm. But actually, that is a licensed.
Yeah, that's insanely raisiny. It's amazing. Yeah. You're going to have to,
Mooses
like,
from heaven.
Send it to Heston and... Mm.
Ollie, your thoughts?
But actually, I mean, you see,
Do you like that? No.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I really love, actually, at the end of a simple meal during the week, maybe it's not simple, but actually you just have a couple of squares or something like that, and it's just, it's a fantastic end.
Totally.
You know, to a long day.
Mm. Yeah, you give yourself some complex flavours. And it's just so satisfying. So satisfying.
But you see, I couldn't eat a whole bar of that because it is so dark and so flavoursome, which is what I think you're right. You just go, God, I just need a couple of bits of that and that is fine. It's lovely. It's great.
Yeah.
Can we talk about you moving into the sort of, I don't know, I've started buying your, it's like a round chocolate block for cooking.
Mm.
Why did you go into that all of a sudden moving? Because nobody else has done that.
I thought that's where you started.
That was my first step.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh, okay.
I drink half of one of these every day. with a tiny bit of chili and sugar and water, no milk. If you put milk, you neutralize all the antioxidants. That's what chocolate was. Cacao was a drink for thousands of years.
Yeah. So you take half a block of
Of one of those. Half a block. 90 grams.
Huge.
And I'm not joking. I have had malaria, various things like that. But actually, I don't get colds. I mean, I swear by it in the sense that it's so full of vitamins and minerals, and it releases endorphins with the feel good factor in your body. It is the ultimate. Sometimes I wonder, you know, when things are going wrong, why am I not feeling bad?
But I think also the flavonoids. So
you're still high on the chocolate.
The flavonoid content.
Yeah, is superior to like anything else. And also like flavonoids are really, really good gut food. And when your gut is happy, inflammation is down. So it's unsurprising that you're not getting sick if you're having that every day. Yeah,
yeah. So this is a block. It's called Peruvian Black and Willy's Cacao. And it's a block of, it's almost like a tube-like. It's 180 grams. I've seen it in the supermarket. It's 100% cacao. It has that notes of raisins and plums, which is the chocolate we've just eaten. Mm. It's a 180-gram block. You actually take half of that and drink that.
90 grams.
Yes, which
water.
Is not half so of that. That is
just with water.
That would make 1.2 litres.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have an organic chili oil. I put one drop in it, which makes it kind of hot. And it is, but it was revered. It was only for the hierarchy.
I love that. Traveling in Mexico, and they do it every morning, you know, it's my favourite thing. They'd say, you know, coffee, tea, or hot chocolate.
And like, you would
hot
go,
chocolate.
Hot chocolate. The awful hot chocolate that we know of.
No, you're in the middle of...
Which has got whipped cream on the top and marshmallows and all that rubbish. This is just a deep, satisfying, almost coffee-like to look at, mug of chocolate.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea you have that every morning.
Yeah, around 10:30 it's my... But I wake up and I have toast, half an avocado, 2 fried duck eggs and a heavy grate of that with a bit of chilli.
Yum.
I mean, everywhere. I always Airbnb it everywhere around the world and I go to Trader Joe's because I have to have that breakfast and no one cooks it.
So what you're saying is you don't book into hotels because they can't do the breakfast that you want.
That's it.
I'm sure there's a hotel owner out there who's saying, Willie, I'm there for you. I'm going to start adding this. It's Willie's breakfast.
Yeah, definitely. And then you were talking just before we went on air about this amazing thing here. It's two. So we've got one. You've got a tub here. Is this actually for sale? Have you just developed this?
I'm not promoting my website, but I wanted to do
you can promote your website,
everything about chocolate. So there's a lot of things that I can't produce commercially viable for the supermarkets or stores or whatever, but they're on my website, whether it's a single estate, cocoa powder, or that's a chocolate stock. So I got some cacao, I ground in juniper berries, black peppercorns, oregano, marjoram, sun-dried tomatoes, and you just pop one of the little pellets in or discs into your casserole or your chili con carne. You'd have to add chili, that obviously it hasn't got. And hey presto, it is the ultimate stock.
And this is a sort of jar. I've got a see-through jar, and it says chocolate stock on the outside. And it's full of, let's say there's 20 pellets in here, or discs, actually, is a better description. And they're not for eating, they're for...
You can try one.
Gravies and casseroles and herbs and spices. Can you eat it?
Have a little nibble. I mean, it's very pleasant. It's not unpleasant at all.
But the whole point is and that's...
about the whole? I love you.
He's got no manners at all. But you really like Mexican cooking, don't you? You love it. So you just dropping one of those, it gives a chili such depth, doesn't it? It's a chili. You can't eat because you've got stuff. And so these pellets, I'm just going to repeat what you said, Willie. So it's got cacao, and then it's got dried tomatoes, thyme, sage, marjoram, bay leaves, black pepper, oregano, juniper berries. And in essence, you're saving somebody a whole bunch of time in that you've done this for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to use a chicken stock, or even if you've got a chicken stock and you want to add flavour, that's a great way of doing it.
It smells incredible.
You're not going to have one.
Well,
I'm quite stunned by this.
I don't like the way you're smiling at me because you normally just get me in trouble. Is it okay?
It's incredible.
It's incredible. I mean, the herb.
That is incredible.
Okay.
It's a really savoury experience.
Yes. Okay.
So it's not chocolate like a dessert chocolate. Mm. But for me, what's interesting about eating that is you really get the sense of how you could put it with lamb. I remember I did an amazing, it's a Marcus Waring dish one New Year's Eve, which is is served on a bed of, it's venison served on a bed of chocolate, and it's just phenomenal.
Sounds
and it's
disgusting. Just,
it's amazing. It's amazing. You put the sort of block of chocolate underneath, which you've made, and then you kind of, you know, drop the hot venison on top and it just melts. You know, it's phenomenal. It works so well because, you know, it's all the flavours you want.
You can particularly get oregano for that.
But of course, once you've added it, it all tones down.
I can see that. Blimey. Now, you're desperate to talk about this block you have in front of you.
It's
wrapped in gold.
Yeah, we're not trying this one.
No, because you want to take it
home.
I'm going
to take it home and cook it. So it's a Mexican mole, and you've basically added chili peppers and spices. And you were saying that you use this at home. How?
Can you just explain what mole is first for people who don't know?
Mole means sauce. So if you're in Mexico and you've got some chicken or some pork or whatever in your fridge, you'd make a mole, and it's a cacao base. And you have three chilies, mulata, pasilla, and anchoa. But it's got sesame seeds, it's got almonds, it's got oregano, it's got prunes. I mean, star anise. It's endless, the list of things. And you'd roast them all, and then you'd refine them into a powder. And you add them to your chicken or pork or whatever it is.
I always think of it as being very dark-coloured.
It's very black. Rich, very dark. I've taken all the seeds out, so it starts off very spicy, but not hot. So you'd add your own level of chilli, and it's not got any salt either at all. You add your own salt. Mm. But it is, I sent it to all my friends. I also put something called anoto in. So I sent it to all my Mexican friends. Anoto is... It's a seed which is red, which they used to put in the hot chocolate when they were sacrificing people, the Aztecs.
They were sacrificing
people. Bizarre thing of sort of blood red cacao dribbling down their mouths while because they sacrificed a lot of people. And so I put that in there because that was an authentic kind of thing to put in. And I got all these things back from my Mexican friends going, oh, really, you're famous here. You make mole rojo. The red mole.
Yeah, the red mole. And you're going to use this, aren't you, can tell?
Yeah, definitely.
And you're very excited about it.
What I like is that actually, it's actually, you know, you talk about, you know, the sort of 30-minute meals and the complexity of cooking at home. But actually, what's wonderful about a product like this, and I would test it and try it, but actually the idea that you can suddenly turn three or four ingredients, thing of passata, one block of this, chicken, into a fantastic
stellar meal.
Absolutely stellar meal. And it really requires... not a lot of skill on the home cook's part. And actually, you've got something that's going to taste incredible.
And you said your wife's out tonight, so you're going to do that on your own, aren't you? Well, and you're going to indulge yourself.
She's got a board meeting, so I expect she'll come back and be like, oh, I'm hungry now, let me have this. So yes. It means I can cook whatever I like.
You're under the thumb, aren't you?
Best made with the whole chicken, because the whole chicken, obviously, the stock coming out of the bones.
Ooh, it's making me hungry, even though I've eaten loads of chocolate. Well, we're obviously talking chocolate for the first half of the programme with Willie's Cacao. We're just going to have a break for 5-6 minutes, and then we're going to be talking to Karen O'Donoghue, who's obviously already very, you can tell she's incredibly knowledgeable about about all this food. And you've bought beautiful cake and you've bought all sorts of other things for us to try. So we're in a really good programme here, aren't we?
Great programme.
It's a great programme. And we'll be back in 5 minutes after my interview with Mina Prince. So I've been eating all sorts of stuff all day. I feel a little bit bloated and don't feel very well. I've had all sorts. I need a bit of a boost.
A bit of a boost. A bit of a natural boost, perhaps.
I need a bit of a natural boost. I need a natural shot of something to just wake me up a little bit. I don't know about you, I'm sagging around the middle as well as generally.
You weren't talking about me, were you?
No, me.
Well, it is the end of the day here at especially in Fine Food Fair. We have eaten many different things, drunk many different things, and in front of us we have a selection of three individually poured little small shots of something called Nature Shot. And we're joined by Mina Prince, the founder of the company. She's going to tell us all about it.
Mina, you're going to rescue me after a day of all just like, you know, grazing on the most weird, like, huge bunch of different things. Are you going to please help me?
I will definitely help you. Hello. I'm Mina Prince, the founder of Nature Shot, which I've just launched May this year, so very new to the market. basically, these nature shots are 125 milliliters, shots of goodness, I like to call them. It's vegetable and fruit based. And the whole idea came from me actually being quite fed up of juicing in the morning, being a bit quite lazy and not sure what ingredients to put together. And then fed up of my juices spilling in my bag or turning brown during the day. So I wanted to really like do something that was easy for me to drink on the go before I go to the gym or when I wake up. So something I could have quickly shot down and then go. Also, I do like vodka shots. So it was a mixture of, okay, my love for nature, natural and being healthy, and then a shot together. And that's how a nature shot came together. It's about having a balanced lifestyle.
Having a balanced lifestyle. Well, right. Well, I'm definitely easily old enough to be your mother. And my general health advice is you can't just burn it at one end. You've got to, you know, you've got to balance it out the other end. And you're doing it already, Mina. I've only just started doing it.
Yeah, well, I'm trying. My parents always been in my case. My mum, eat your vegetables. So, yeah, I'm doing Pilates and yoga. So,
absolutely. So so we've got three here. Are you recommending that we take them in order? And are you going to guarantee that I'm going to leave the Olympia trotting away much happier after feeling a little bit saggy?
No guarantees, but there is a favorite. Everyone has their own favorites, and so there's no order to take them. They are very unique in different flavors. I've got my cousins here today who we all have our different ones that we really like. So generally my favorite one is the green tea nature shot, which is mixed with ginger, parsnip.
So I'm going to go that one. So yeah. I'm going to go for the green tea with sweet potato, ginger and parsnip. And right, I'm just going to just do it like a shot, really. Go.
So that's my fiery kick for the day. So I generally have that after I've done a yoga session just to get that kick in me. It is, those people who do not love ginger, it's probably not their favourite to have. Some people say it's a bit too gingery. Others are like, they love it to... Yeah.
Love ginger.
I love ginger. And I wouldn't have picked ginger out of a lineup in there. I think it's quite subtle.
Not bad at all. So that's a good one. So I've just done that one. And then the next one is a greeny one.
Yeah.
That one's got...
matcha tea with kale, mint and cucumber. So this is the favourite. It's ingredients that people recognise. So the first one obviously was quite unique and like, oh my gosh, sweet potato. But this one's like, okay, we understand what's in this one. It's your refreshing shot for the day.
And what have you actually done then? Have you actually literally juiced these so that I don't have to?
So basically what I did, I initially started off doing these in my kitchens to get some flavours. Then I worked with a food company and we looked at extracts to put together and they then blended them together and we put it into this in bottles and... from there, the process is there.
That tastes a little bit sweet to me.
Yeah, that's really nice, actually. There is a sweetness to it. It's the...
Why is the sweetness there?
It's got some stevia in it, so it's a natural sweetener in there, so there's no added sugar in there, and some apple juice as well, just to add that in from there.
It's the mint that I can taste coming through the bag, but it's, yeah, just, again, very, very subtle.
And then I'm quite interested in this one because it seems like a bit of an odd mix. So you're in your kitchen having a little bit of a bash of, you know, what could be different. Interesting ingredients?
Very interesting. So this is green coffee bean extract with red beet and cherry. This basically came from, I'm a management consultant during the day and you need that top up for that caffeine shot. So this is where I got this one from. It's a very earthy taste and the very cherry taste in it.
Okay, so I've just got a coffee going on, and then all of a sudden there's a little bit of red beetroot, and then there's a lovely sour cherry at the end, and they're all in, and they've just hit me in terms in order.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I was looking at this thinking, oh, coffee, you know, I like coffee when it's hot and, you know, like espresso, whereas any cold coffee doesn't really do it for me. But this is really interesting. It's almost like a liquid dessert almost. So I'm not sure how it would be like kick-starting the day because it feels a bit sweet for that, but really, really interesting flavours.
So I normally don't have this one during the day. It's my afternoon pick-me-up. So those people who have like a cappuccino shot, that's when I would have that just to...
Or a chocolate.
Yeah, to re-energise myself and to get me back in the mood of things. So yeah, that's when I'll take that one.
Well, jolly good. So where can people get these? Where are you selling them at the moment?
So currently I'm selling it online, which is www.natureshot.co.uk. So as I said, I just launched in May, so everything's online and we're going to take it from there.
Oh, good luck. I think that's the first one, actually. Sweet potato, ginger, parsnip.
I think the coffee one, actually. I'm really surprised at that, but it was really, really nice. Yeah, really good stuff.
Nice to meet you, Mina, and good luck with it.
Thanks very much for having me. Cheers.
And that was Mina Prince of Nature Shot. So we're back in the studio, Food Talk Show. We've been talking to Willie about Willie's Cocoa. We've eaten all sorts here, but we're not going to stop eating. Just, you know, as we do this, obviously, for people who listen. I don't actually want to do it, Karen, but, you know, somebody's got to do it. And we're now speaking to Karen O'Donoghue of the Happy Tummy Company. Now, you're on a mission to rid the world of IBS.
Yes.
So that's irritable bowel syndrome.
Yep.
And have developed a range of specially fermented and gluten-free bread, all that sort of stuff. How did you get into that? Why are you so passionate? You're obviously very knowledgeable.
I'm very, very passionate about IBS. Very passionate about poo in general. Basically, I was born with genetic IBS. And I was raised on a farm. My parents were horticulturists. I was surrounded by organic, wild, sustainable living from a very early age and was a very part of planting and making food from scratch. But for some reason, I had this issue and it never went away. And it was in my mid-20s, my early 20s, when I was producing a TV show in Ireland, that it got really, really, really bad with stress and travel and everything.
Just hereditary, as far as you know.
Hereditary for me. For me, it's hereditary. For most people, it's stress-induced.
Right.
So from a very early age, I always wanted to work in preventative medicine. You know, working and growing up on a farm, I guess, inspired that in me. And I really wanted to use food as medicine. Mm-hmm. So in my mid-20s, my IBS got incredibly bad, so bad that there were times where I wouldn't have any bowel movement for 3 weeks. And I just thought, you know, this is absolutely insane. So I basically spent...
I mean, people might laugh at that, but that is so painful.
That's so painful. And also it's painful. So many people are going through this, and it's only when you start opening up about it and talking about it and giving talks on gut healthy living that you have throngs of people approach you and email you every day.
And people might find that very difficult to talk about because your natural reaction is to laugh or whatever, but deadly serious.
Absolutely. And I think actually that was one of my biggest challenges setting up this kind of a company in the UK, was people were afraid to talk about this sort of stuff. And anytime I go on trips to America, people are dying to tell me about their issues.
That's Americans for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm half joking, but they're more likely to be open about stuff.
Absolutely.
We've still got a bit of a stiff upper lip here, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's totally understandable. Mm. You know, you do something in a private room, you think it should stay in that private room. But I think to progress, one has to just start really opening up about this. So open up about it I did, and open up about the fact that I had created a product after 18 months that cured me of my IBS. So literally I went from having one bowel movement every 3 weeks to now 2 a day. And that's been like for the past 7 years since I developed the product. And I'm really proud of that. And what happened for me was I was working in food at the time. I was a product developer for another food company. And people just started finding out about this loaf. And so in the early days, I literally would just be fermenting this bread for friends and people that found out about it, and driving around London, like on my time off, like delivering this to people's homes. And then the Soho House group found out about it and asked me to come in and give a talk. So I gave a talk on, like, you know, my journey and how I'd kind of cured myself of IBS. And there was maybe 200 people at that talk, and all the people at that talk either had some sort of digestive issue or had IBS or something like that. And at the time, I was kind of ready to give the recipe away. I just want everyone to, like, have, you know, happy gut or whatever. And at that talk, people were like, please start making this loaf.
What they're saying is, please help me.
Yeah, 100%. And so that was basically the baptism of initially the Happy Bread Company, and we rebranded to the Happy Tummy Co. because what happened was the loaf started ridding everyone of their IBS, but then they were like, what do you have for lunch? What do you have for dinner? What kind of alcohol do you drink? What exercise do you do? And it became more of a lifestyle thing that people were like, well, you look happy and healthy now. Like, how can we be like you? And then the mission kind of widened.
So explain to me about bread. Is, you know, what we used to is using flour and
gluten isn't
supposedly an essential part of bread making because of the elasticity and also the texture and the crumble and all that sort of stuff. As soon as I've tried to make gluten-free, you know, with gluten-free flour at home, bread's absolutely horrendous and a disaster.
Yeah.
But bread's really important. important to people, isn't it? It is yeah, natural human thing. It feels like a natural thing.
Yeah, bread. I think it makes mealtimes much easier to put together. Mm. Like Willie talked about just smashing his avocado on his toast every morning and put a chocolate on top, and that's a really nutritious meal. And I think for me, you know, I was very time poor, you know, living in London, you're like, how can I make my food as functional as possible without having to like wash up a smoothie maker every morning and have like loads of ingredients in the store cupboard and fridge that are going
into
this product?
It's just not practical.
No, not at all. So I thought, okay, if I can make bread a super, super functional product whereby all you have to do is like put some spread on it to make that a complete meal, in terms of like you get your all your vitamins and minerals, all your fiber, all your dietary protein, et cetera, from this one product, and then all you have to do is put one spread on top, then I feel like that's a success. And that's what my company is trying to build, is very, very functional products for time poor people. So
right, well, I'm going to taste some of your
bread. We basically do all the work for you. We spend 2 days making this product. We also have sourced the best ingredients from all over the world that goes into this loaf. The real superfood in this loaf that makes this so effective for people with gut issues is teff. So teff is the seed of love grass, which is grown in Ethiopia. Ethiopians were the first people to basically grow grain for human consumption. So it's quite a special story. And then we also source our hazelnuts from the base of Mount Etna. We have our buckwheat and millet grown here in the UK. We source our linseed from Austria because it's the best linseed in the world. However, we will be choosing Ethiopia going forward. And there's a bunch of other stuff in there that basically form this mathematical equation that make it very, very functional and very, very good gut bacteria food. So that's how this was designed, and that's how everything I do is designed.
That is incredibly tasty. Do you like that, Ollie?
It's delicious. I mean,
it is really delicious. Really delicious.
What's always, I mean, I always find that so much health food stuff is really
so bland.
So bland, so tasteless.
Yeah.
I mean, Genius have done very well, I think, in terms of, you know, some of the gluten-free bread, but it's
It's not a patch
on this.
Amazing.
Some more of that in a minute.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, that's the thing, right? Like, we all know taste is king. If you want to solve a problem, if you want to get rid of IBS, you have to create tasty products. No one's going to continue buying cardboard, even though it does surprise me how much cardboard people do buy with...
Because they'll buy it
because in the end, if the problem is big enough, you will do anything to resolve it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
my daughter is celiac, you know, medically celiac, and so she can't. We end up in A&E if she eats gluten, you know. And she's had all sorts of breads, and it's just because she wants beans on toast, or she wants, you know, all the things that's what she wants. And so she will put up, as you said, Ollie, she will put up with something reasonably bland because she's not going to be ill and it'll be fine. And in some respects, bread for her is a carrier as opposed to something that you eat in its own right.
Of course.
I'd eat that in its own right.
As do I, but also as a carrier for many things.
What's interesting is, so we always play the research card here, which is if you look at the data around how many people are avoiding wheat and gluten in the UK, national number, it's 6%. Right. Mm-hmm. Increase for females to about 7, down to men.
And by avoiding, you mean people are doing that out of choice?
So the question we have is, do you avoid eating any of the following foods?
Okay.
And one of the options is gluten or wheat. And it increases to almost 11% amongst 18 to 24-year-olds. Mm. And it's interesting, I think, you know, your comment about sort of awareness, being prepared to talk about things, share about things, you know, in the end... Lots of people just said, oh, you know, I just don't get on with, you know, a long time ago, before any of this stuff was even understood, you just say, oh, I don't really get on with food, or I've never grumbly tummy, whatever it is. Now I just think it's much more awareness and understanding of various conditions, and people are much more, I think certainly amongst the younger generation are actually aware of it and are doing something about it, which is interesting.
Yeah. I think actually for me, as a whole, we have so, so far to go in terms of education around food still. I think people throw around terms, they like talk about antioxidants, they talk about vitamins, they talk about their B complex, and they talk about all these things that are probably just like the biggest letters on some packaging, right? And they talk about prebiotics and probiotics. And they don't actually understand how those work, because those are just presented as singular things. And I get asked all the time, like, where do you think we are in terms of how people view their guts? And where do you think we are in terms of education right now? And I say, actually, I don't think we're anywhere. Because fundamentally, the one thing that we all have to understand is everything in life starts with fibre. So our good gut bacteria, their food of choice is fiber. And unless they're fed their food of choice, they die off. And that's when you get like leaky gut and stuff. And unless they're fed their food of choice, they cannot create enzymes to break down food to take out the vitamins and minerals from that food. So
what you're saying is that fiber is essential.
A fiber is essential for life.
Yeah.
And if you eat high amounts of fiber, you won't get sick. You won't get ill. You will stave off illness as you get older. You will also have greater profiles of better good gut bacteria in your gut. So I'm answering your question, Ollie, in a really weird way. But basically, my point is that I think those teenagers, yes, they're eating well because there's lots of businesses like mine out there now who are trying to
feed
your gut. Yeah. And like, for example, coming here, I saw a girl who was maybe 14 years old eating a chia pot out of a Pret-a-Manger bag on the train. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, I wouldn't have probably seen that even a year ago.
If I was her mother, though, I'd say that she should eat at a table and sit down.
Of course.
No, I'm only joking. Yeah. But that means that she's aware of that.
Absolutely. Mm. But I guess, so for me, what I'm trying to do through my company and what I want to see nutritionists and dietitians do in particular, which I don't think they're doing a good enough job of at the moment, is promoting fiber as the key nutrient of life. And then, you know, then you can obviously absorb your B vitamins and your E vitamins and antioxidants and all that kind of stuff. But unless you're feeding your good gut bacteria, which, as we all know, is the second brain of the body, it's food of choice. It's very, very difficult to get all the nourishment that you should be getting from that bag of spinach leaves or whatever it is. And that's the reason people are like, why did you launch with bread when you're trying to cure IBS? Loads of people are wheat intolerant, like la, la, la. But actually what people aren't getting enough of nowadays are grains, nuts and seeds.
Yeah.
And the right combination of grains to nuts to seeds.
And what's your take on Willy's, chocolate?
I think everyone should be eating Willy's chocolate or chocolate of equivalent standard. I think cacao is a fantastic source of flavonoids. I think anyone that gives up cacao for Lent is ridiculous. I speak to so many women who always give up coffee, chocolate and wine at Lent. And goodness, they always get bloated. They always get constipated. They put on weight. And I'm like, well, that's because you've just eradicated loads of antioxidants from your diet by taking out coffee, cacao and wine.
So you're suggesting I don't give up wine?
I'm absolutely suggesting that you increase the amount of cacao you
Sue has just had.
Can I just say, Karen, I bloody love you.
But you know what? Like, it's so funny. Like, this is the actual truth of the matter.
But this is in moderation.
But also the truth of the matter is that people that eat, you know, drink good wine, eat good cacao, you know, eat lots of fiber, eat lots of plants, eat lots of grains, don't eat too much meat. Those people have the best profiles of good gut bacteria in their guts. Those people are the healthiest people, you know, living and breathing on our earth. So
keep drinking that chocolate, Willie.
Yeah.
Every morning.
And that red wine in the evening.
See, he's very happy about that. gut health is going to be the thing, isn't it? I think. And people are becoming more and more aware that, you know, we've got all these ridiculous, you know, sort of food crazes going on and whatever.
Yeah.
But I think there's becoming a much more understanding that if you don't look after your gut, you're going to be in trouble.
Absolutely. My issue, obviously, with this, of course, I'm sure you can predict, is that it may go down the gluten-free route, which is people will put like gut healthy on some packaging and there might be one ingredient in there that's gut healthy.
Yeah. They'll hijack it.
Yeah. And for me, like, I mean, I've been on this mission for years now. And since starting my company, so many companies have come on and, you know, are like putting prebiotic on their labeling and all this sort of stuff. And I'm just like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, people don't understand what prebiotic fiber is. They don't understand what it's meant to do. You know, they've probably read in Style magazine or somewhere that this is the new superfood or this is the new thing that we should all be aware of. So now they're going to buy things. So for me, I mean, marketing and packaging upsets me because there are so many people that are out there to make a quick buck off people as opposed to solve a problem. So I guess, you know, to any listeners that do have digestive issues, that do have IBS, that are trying to look after their gut better, you know, research and go to dietitians and nutritionists
who really have the right information.
Do not trust a food label.
Yeah. Although, and again, with you, Willie, what you were saying is, though, you know, if it's got vanilla in it, if it's got this in it, you know it's not authentic.
Yeah,
and you
absolutely.
Just need to do your research so you've got a quick shortcut so you can work out what is the right stuff and what isn't.
For me, there's so, like, I mean, I don't shop in supermarkets because, like, most of that stuff does have loads of stabilisers in it and all that kind of stuff to give it those long shelf lives. Obviously, there are products like yogurts and milk that are fine. But I mean, outside of that, I'm obviously very pro people making food from scratch and that being the best thing you can do for your gut.
definitely. And we were talking last week with Caroline Steele about how desperate we are that children aren't getting enough education at school and possibly at home in terms of cooking and food and knowledge, you know, all that sort of stuff. Needs to go back on the curriculum, politicians, please.
Absolutely.
Needs to go back on the curriculum because if you don't understand that, you can't make the choices that you've just been talking about.
Absolutely. You know, what's really interesting is since starting my career in this, I've noticed that when I started out doing this, I had to talk all about the science, you know, the commodities, like the political structure of what makes us eat how we eat today. And now actually 50% of my talks, I focus on happiness. I just talk about happiness. I just talk about how you're feeling, because I think what we've lost sight of is actually how are we feeling? Does gluten agree with me? Does it not agree with me? We've just become so consumed about how people look and aesthetics. Like, you know, we're so consumed about how something looks, the packaging, that I feel like we've almost shut down a part of our brain that says, but how am I feeling?
But
just because
that
girl on Instagram feels good eating that way, do I feel good eating that way?
I mean, to be honest though, Karen, that's why Ollie and I are on the radio, because you don't want to look at us, really, frankly. we'd never make it on the telly, would we, Ollie?
I think you're both very beautiful, but I do think sometimes just listening to a message is much more powerful than
and really trying to listen to how your body reacts.
But I think it's important that I think at times we aren't, you know, focused enough on knowledge, and we're focused too much on the visual. You know, your whole point about Instagram, which is, you know, people are sharing all these happy visuals, but actually, you know, what you're talking about is fundamentals of what's going into you, and is it agreeing with you?
Absolutely.
Which is, don't get me into Kim Kardashian, whatever you do.
Yeah,
I know just, you follow her.
The whole sort of
let it go
stuff around that is just oh dear, I will let it go. So, if you want to find out more about Karen and her work, and you know, try and understand much more about all the things she's been saying, you need to go onto thehappytummyco.com. So that's thehappytummyco.com, or go onto our website and you'll find all about it. And where can we get your bread? That is amazing.
So we are a anti-waste company, so we only bake to order, because three days of work goes into each loaf. So you can order through our website.
And I live 60 miles from here. Can you drop off a couple of loaves tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I can in 2 days' time.
I'm only joking.
But no, we deliver straight to people's homes or offices. And then there are many cafes around London that do use our bread on their sandwiches.
Very good indeed. And Willy's Cacao, I mean, available everywhere, I think, now, is it? More or less?
Well,
pretty much.
quite a few places. Waitrose, Sainsbury's, lots of small delis, Selfridges, all sorts of places.
For me, and I know Ollie will say this as well, you know, the cooking stuff is fantastic, and you can only get that on through your website, can't you?
On that particular,
and that's williscacao.com. So if you're interested in that's the Mexican mole for cooking with, and some of the other stuff to put in casseroles, you're going to steal that, aren't you?
I'm going to tweet out a picture of how
cooking it. Okay, yeah, we'll all be around your house later. So please go on there. Great chocolate and great stories. So you've been listening to The Food Talk Show, and we're syndicated all across the UK and further afield from California, hoping we might get over to Venezuela at some point, get some radio shows to have our podcast, if you can, please, Willie.
From my farm.
Yeah. And Malta as well. You've got relatives in Malta. Indeed. I'm sure they listen to you every week. So thank you, Ollie of Great British Chefs. If you want to recommend any future guests, or you want to comment on some of the things that Karen and Willie's been saying, please tweet us on @foodtalkshow. Or if you want to listen to any of our hundreds of podcasts now, go to foodtalk.co.uk. Thanks again to Karen and Willie. Have a good week. Bye.